Today is Monday, the 16th of November, 2020. And Be'ezrat Hashem, it should be a wonderful week, a Chodesh Tov, and only good news. I want to express to Elliot once again, Nicham Avel. He's B'toch Shloshim for a wonderful, wonderful brother. I hear superlatives about him. Hamokim Menachem et kol ha'mishpacha b'toch shavel etzim v'Yerushalayim lo tosifu l'dava od. I also want to mention that Jack reminded me, Bet Kislev, later this week, is the yahrzeit of the greatest Marbitzei Torah that America ever had. It's amazing. It's all on one day. Rabbi Revel, 1940. Afterwards, Reb Aaron Cutler was 62. And a number of years later was Reb Moshe Aaron Paleyev, who taught Shas and Paiskim at Yeshiva Shvus Chochanan for 46 years, was a beloved Rebbe, just a beloved Rebbe, a beloved personality. I also want to mention, to talk about Matitza Torah, if you saw this week's Makor Rishon, so in the Yoman section, they talk about Rav Avram Silbit, whose yahrzeit just fell. Rav Avram Silbit, this is an American. A book should be written what the Anglos, or the, specifically the Americans, and perhaps Canadians, what we accomplished in Israel. We have a lot to be proud of. Rav Avram Silbit died young. I still recall visiting him in the hospital when my father-in-law, Lena, was on his final days. And he died in his mid-40s, 40 years ago. This man built Torah in Be'er Sheva. If you know the history, there was no yeshiva tichonit. There was really nothing that people wanted to raise from kids in Be'er Sheva. They had to send them out of the city. And he took over the high school, turned it into a yeshiva high school, into a Beis Medrash, and got the support of Sir Isaac Wolfson of London, I believe Marks and Spencer. And today, all the institutions you have in Be'er Sheva, it's one of the Yiv Ein B'Yisrael. And Reb Avraham not only built Torah, but he attracted a lot of Anglos, professionals, to come to the university, to come to the hospital. We have chinuch for the children. And
he grew up in Washington.
He grew up in Washington. I was just going to say, his parents were immigrants to the States. He went to Torah Vedas.
And father was the butcher.
That's right. And from Brooklyn, they moved to Washington, but he moved back to New York, graduated Torah Vedas, got a college degree, learned in Mir B'Chavruta with Reb Meir Kahana. And I knew Avraham intimately from B'nai Akiva. He married Shoshana Talansky, the brother of the famous Moshe Talansky, who was involved in bringing down Olmert. And they had wonderful children. I taught a number of his daughters in Mechola. And I wouldn't be surprised if the Rav Avram Silbit, Shoshana and Avraham have over 200 direct descendants today. I would not be surprised. And then there's a beautiful picture here. Again, you can't see it. A beautiful picture of Rav Avraham, and it's an affair of the yeshiva. There's Saha Pnim Yosef Burg. And the person standing here, who's not identified, he's blocked out, you don't see his total face, that's Ruby Davidman, who was the executive director of the yeshiva, afterwards the executive director of BMT. That's Davidman from the famous Davidman family that ran the hotel. All right, Yehei Zichron Baruch, all the great Mabitzei Torah. And we should be zeichel lahabitz Torah. I need decades to come to get out of my system all that I have prepared. Now, in relation to Pesach Seurim, Mark Licht wondered that perhaps the Rav spoke with Reb Aaron about the shaila of taking Jews out of Cuba on Yom Kippur just so there shouldn't be machlokes later. No, that's entirely wrong. The Rav spoke with Reb Aaron. And as the Rav expressed himself to David Weingarten, because he was very hesitant to pass in such an earth-shaking question, without talking with someone he considered Echad Migdolei Yisrael. So, and regarding Tinek, Mark Licht writes to me there was a Sephardic minion there, etc. I didn't say that the Yekes came out of Washington Heights. I didn't say that it was totally established by the Germans. But I'm absolutely correct in saying that Tinek and Englewood became a big attraction for those who wanted more space and more air in suburbia and left Washington Heights, and ultimately they played a very big role in building up these communities. In my past lectures on Touro, I just want to make some corrections. I mentioned that I have to thank Rabbi Moshe Kripke, who made these corrections, meaning that I said that the president of Touro, who's a cardiologist, the doctor, Kadish from Chicago, brought to New York, he learned b'chavruta with Danny Landa, who heads up Or Chaim, Rabbi Landa, and Bernie's son, Oni's son. And I thought they were chavruta in Yeshiva College. They were chavruta in Manhattan Talmudical Academy. Dr. Rabbi Landa continued in Yeshiva College, but Dr. Kadish went on to Columbia U, where he was a summa cum laude graduate. Also, I want to mention that Rabbi Moshe Kripke, I mentioned he left the OU, he went to Touro, but I mumbled under my breath. It was one of those fallouts from the scandal where the top echelon moved on. I was correct about many in the top echelon, but not Moshe Kripke, who really had nothing to do with NCSY. He was involved in the synagogue administration, etc. And he could have remained at the OU indefinitely. But Dr. Landa, to quote Reb Moshe, made him an offer he couldn't refuse, which I told my grandson about yesterday, and quoting Reb Moshe's words. And I said, and now what do you think of your grandfather, whom Rabbi Landa offered him $50,000 to go back to New York, 1974, January. I told my grandson, I'll show you in the King's Hotel exactly where we stood when he made that offer. I told my grandson, that's like offering someone $500,000 today. And we were starving at the time. But what can I tell you, as beautiful as the offer was, I had to refuse. Thank God we Alinu Atza, we came to Israel, and we haven't left Israel. Finally, I have to say here I disagree with Reb Moshe. He takes issue with what I said, that Rabbi Bernard Landa said to me, we take from the Goyim and give to the Jews. So Reb Moshe writes to me, all programs, those serving the Jewish community and those for the community at large, enjoy the same level of institutional support and scholarship assistance with complete parity. One entity does not pay for another. The Touro University system, which has achieved financial stability, views all of its schools, campuses, and divisions with equal appreciation and pride. And I say to Reb Moshe, beautiful, I agree with you, but nevertheless, these ears heard from Rabbi Bernard Landa, we take from the Goyim and give to the Jews. So we'll make a compromise that, yes, everyone's treated equally, but nevertheless, the fact that Touro College has so many divisions that are not necessarily Jewish or dealing with Torah issues, it helps them remain financially solvent. But if it's a machlokes between the current vice president and the founder and dreamer and visionary, so I'll say it's very simple. The founder and visionary and dreamer was talking bismano, and Rabbi Kripke is talking bisman hazeh. All right, now let's get down to business, and I can't believe that everything we're talking about is major, major machlokes today. It's going back and forth, and there's no solution. The problem haunts us, it will continue to haunt us, maybe at the end of all my talk and when we finish with the Rav in a few weeks' time, I'll offer my own thinking, but let me not be overly wise. Where do we draw the line? Torah is Torah, and yet Jews are Jews. And we'll talk about this in great depth. But the machleket is boiling over now on the Israeli scene. If, as I mentioned yesterday, if you saw the weekend press and you saw the alonim, the freebies given out for Shabbos, LaYehudim Haita Ora V'Simcha. Now, we spoke about the Netziv, we spoke about the background, we spoke about Auftritt. I have to tell you that someone who's a fine scholar wrote to me that he feels, I'm talking again from Bill Gewirtz, who I quoted yesterday, he understands that in addition to the Netziv, Reb Chaim Moshe was also opposed to Auftritt. It was claimed that Reb Chaim Moshe Grzynski's relationship with Rabbi Chil Yaakov Weinberg was at least partly due to his desire to learn about how Gemara, how Germany dealt with assimilation. And there probably is truth to that. But as I said last week, and this gets caught up in the contemporary machlokas, to quote the Netziv, it's not exactly the same as Auftritt. In Western Europe, they march to the church. It resembles America. America, they don't march to the church. They just march to a religion of idol worship. They worship themselves. There's no God. There's no Torah. Just Shema. If a guy's named John, so Yaakov in Hebrew, or Jacob, he says, Shema Jake. Jake is our God. Jake is one. And that's what it amounts to. And this is an absolute fact. The synagogues are empty all year. The temples, I should say, are empty. The churches are empty. This is part of the modern liberal leftist thinking. Nachum Lamb quoted a lady living in Rehavia for many years. She said, never were there demonstrations on Shabbos, even if most of the people were not religious, but they had respect for Shabbos. Nowadays, as you know, this past Shabbos, the police had to come out in full force Shabbos afternoon. They were marching, demonstrating. Some of the police wear kippot. Could you imagine what they have to do on Shabbos is be mechallel Shabbos to guard these people who don't believe in God, don't believe in Judaism. And yes, it's true. This is the world today. 50 years ago, 40 years ago, you were dealing with a different element. Even if they were totally mechallel Shabbos, ochlein nevelet and kreifot, but they came from homes, they knew what Yiddishkeit was, and they understood that a frum Jew cannot be mechallel Shabbos, you don't want to hurt his feelings, you have to respect him. Today, Davka lechallel Shabbat is part to get rid of the prime minister who sits in a government with Haredim and Datayim, etc., etc. So all this is absolutely true. This is Western Europe. Eastern Europe, the assimilation was very different. It was, I would say, a more positive assimilation. Socialism, communism, and these are, you can develop, I can't go into it now, but some of you know that when I went to Russia, I came back and did a lot of study of communism. And you can make a whole case for communism, Judaism, equality. Why should people be different? It went into Zionism. I need not tell you that we can. One of the things I am going to write about, B'ezrat Hashem, in the middle now, is how to deal with Zionism, how it came about for Theodor Herzl. We'll leave that for another time, but I think when I finish writing and cite my proofs, if you have an open mind, you'll have to agree with me that the whole Zionist movement can only come about through someone who was raised in the court of Paro. And I think you should understand what I'm alluding to. Okay, so it could very well be that the Netziv and Reb Chaim Moshe and others wanted to keep communication. These people had left Torah, but at least were Jewish in the full sense of the word. And you can't necessarily, in my opinion, quote the Netziv. But be it as it may, the Netziv was brought back to life, And Rav Malamed quotes him, and El Yehuda Maitar Rova Simcha at this very moment in time. Now, the swing to the right is very prominent, and by 1956, they are strong enough, self-confident enough, they're no longer guests in America, they're here to stay, and you have what's popularly called the Cherem against Synagogue Council and Board of Rabbis. We'll go in later today, next week we'll go into more detail, we'll read the actual Lashon. I actually translated it from Hebrew into English in the Silver era, and I'll give you the names of the people who signed, but this was a very important statement, which I would say to a certain degree shapes the picture and future of Torah in the Western world until today. Ultimately, it impacts on Yeshiva University, it impacts on Synagogue Council. By 1994, the Synagogue Council is no longer viable, it has to shut down. How this all began is shrouded in mystery. Louis Bernstein, in his doctorate and his thesis, says we don't know for sure. Aaron Rakefet gave you what he remembers. Can I swear that I'm right? Absolutely not. But that's what we heard. I was already old enough at that time to have my ears listening carefully what's going on in our greater world. And David Hollander started the ball rolling. Sam Feuerstein had that tremendous dilemma, Temple Emanuel, inauguration of the new offices. He asked the Rav. The Rav didn't give a definitive answer. We have to call the Halachic Commission together. And then he met Reb Aaron at a wedding, and Reb Aaron already thought about it overnight. Within a day or two, a question came in from the Rabbinic Alliance, and 11 Rosh Hashiva Psak. Now, what's very fascinating is Reb Lazer Silver, and here I want to quote from my second work. It's gone through four editions already. This is the cover. Tova Lichtenstein couldn't get over the cover. She said, "It is rabbinic, in not a rabbinic uniform, but the picture is of Reb Lazer in the uniform of the United States Army when he visited the DP camps." Tovin and, you know, the Soloveitchik family knew Reb Lazer intimately because he was the Rav's lodestar. This was the Rav's mentor his first 10, 15 years in America. If you would have asked the Rav, what do you want to achieve in America? I want to be like Reb Lazer Silver. That's the way it began. Now, Reb Lazer was very unique, and this is hard for you to understand in this generation. In this generation, you'll mention who are the leading guiding us, the leading rabbis, and you're going to come up with one Rosh Yeshiva after another. There is not one rabbi you will mention, unless you have Hasidic overtones, so maybe you'll mention my Talmud, Rabbi Moshe Weinberger, the Eish Kodesh Rebbe. But if you don't have Hasidic overtones, there's no rabbi you're going to mention. With all due respect, I have Talmidim that are very, Rabbi Goldberg, Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg, but you wouldn't quote that he's the Echad Migadolei Yisrael, Rabbi Heshel Shechter, all right, it's a Rosh Yeshiva, Gaon Adir, Reb Morty Willig, Reb Michael Rosenzweig, etc. Reb Lazer Silver was the last practicing rabbi who you had to turn to, you couldn't disregard. First of all, he was a Gaon Adir. And I've said this before, but let me say it again in context. Meshula, listen carefully, he was self-made in America. Other people came to America, you'll say, for the sake of Rav Moshe Soloveitchik came to America. Rav Moshe Soloveitchik came to America, a finished product. Rav Shlomo Palachek came to America, a finished product. Rav Yehuda Leib Feuer Benjamin came to America. If you don't know the name, make believe you do, so the ignorant pass for the wise, darn it. And I told you, take off 7 years and listen to Rakefet, gain some knowledge and insight. Reb Yehuda Leib Feuer came to America, finished product. Reb Lazer Silver was in Eloy, had a good cup, but he had to run away from Europe. I told you the story. You tell these stories, no one believes you. I'm telling you what I heard from the family. He did a terrible thing. He walked into the Strassoon Library in Vilna, which was the top rabbinic library in all of Europe. And there was a beautiful librarian there, a young girl. He fell in love with her. Not a shidduch, not anything, got married, and people murmured, his father was a shtat rav, and er machs vazich aleina shidduch, he makes his own shidduch. He said, the heck with you, he went to America, he came to America, he had relatives there, he wanted, 1907, he wanted to become a businessman, he started selling insurance. Within a few months, the family pleaded with him, become a rav, you're not cut out for business. And so he took a little shteller in Harrisburg and he remained there for many years and he learned around the clock. This is what I heard from the rav. He was self-made in America. He learned till 12, 1 o'clock in the morning. Let's say whatever business he had for as a rabbi, by 4 o'clock he was finished. He had gezitzin and gelernt. Then he had aggravation, because the lights were on in the shul. There was one president who was mad, why is the rabbi wasting electricity? Could you imagine? And he became a gon adia. And I told you many times when the rabbi, let me tell the story again and tell it in context, and I have new students in front of me, you never heard the story. Gentlemen, stories like this don't go for nothing. Noah, it's 36,000 shekel linked to the, $36,000 linked to the shekel to the Rebbe's IOU list. You willing to pay it? Thank you. I never collect from students, but if I would give it to you for nothing, you'll make the mug and make a doctor heals for nothing, it's worth nothing. Their little story heard this with two ears from the Rav. So the Rav said when he first came to America, and you know, then I found out of it, and I heard this from others who were, everyone's laughing. Rav Moshe said, my son, a gone, a clean shaven guy, a PhD from Berlin. Everyone said, what kind of gone? Who is it? All right. So right after he comes, they arrange for him to give the first year he's going to give in America. It's for the Agudas HaRabbanim, and they invite the top students from Yeshivas Hanan and Reb Moshe before they go. Before his son comes in to give the shiur on Avodas Yom HaKippurim. The later part of the shiur is printed by Reb Aaron Lichtenstein, put out by Moshe Rav Kook, Avodas Yom HaKippurim. So Reb Moshe says to his son, Mein Zun, I have to say it in English, but I'm living it in Yiddish. My son, Hat Nishmere, don't be afraid. You're going to come into the room, say, Zitzen dort in Allah mit langem Bad, mit Shane Rabbanish and Begadim. All of them are sitting there with long beards, rabbinic clothes. It's a good thing they have good memories. They haven't opened a Gemara since they left Europe. But says the Einim, I claim there's one man, a short guy with a big cylinder, you'll see, he'll sit in the corner. For man, Hot Meira, you got to worry about him. Eken learning, he knows how to learn. And the Rav said when he finished the shiur, everyone ran to give him Yashakayach. Rav Lazer Silver shakes, Yashakayach, younger man, young man, Yashakayach. And he, in his hand, he puts in a tzettel, a note. The Rav puts it in his pocket. He gets home 7 unbelievable questions on his shiur. So this was Reb Lazer. Now, please understand. Reb Lazer, and again, you didn't hear my shiurim, it's all on YU Torah, we spent many months. He was Mr. Agudas HaRabbanim in the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, into the 50s. The man was a tremendous Baal Chesed. The Rav said when he eulogized him that when the first Aguda convention was held in Cincinnati in 1938, after, again, I spoke about this in great depth, but it's not for now. So the plane flying to Cincinnati, people were flying for the first time in their life and for the convention, and the Rav heard people say, if everyone for whom Reb Lazer had done a favor would be going to Cincinnati, they'd have to use the entire, all the planes that Pan American has. That's how many people he did favors for. He was a tzaddik. It reached the point that the shul did not pay him, they paid his wife. Because he could walk home from shul and someone come over with a hard luck story and they're marrying off a daughter and he would give away his whole salary. So they had to pay his wife, not him. These are facts. So even though it's the era of Rashi Yeshiva, and I'll give you a background on this and I'm going to confess one of my sins today, one of my many sins. I will confess in public. Chatai ani maskir hayom. We'll get there shortly. Mark Watson, you have a relative sitting in front of me, Benjamin Pfeiffer. Mark is smiling and looking at me and going like this right now. Okay? And he's waving to you. Okay. He waves back. So they turn to Reb Lazer to sign the Issa. Reb Lazer refused. And this is very fascinating. Why did he refuse? Because Reb Lazer was in the rabbinate. There's a big difference between a Rosh Yeshiva and a rabbi. A Rosh Yeshiva sits in an ivory tower. I can say what I want. No one's paying my salary. What are they going to do? Baruch Hashem, I have students. They can't fire me. They can yell, they can shout, they can agree or disagree. But I'm a Rosh Yeshiva. I have to say what I consider the truth. Someone in the rabbinate is dealing with balabatim, you're dealing with the real world. As I said to you last week, halavai they would have kissed my hands in 61 to 69, my 8 years in the American rabbinate. All right, it's a struggle. You have to learn how to get along with people, how to be mature, what to stand, make an issue, what not to make an issue, flexibility, compromise, what can you compromise, what can't you compromise? These are all very delicate questions. And I know why you today, training rabbis as a result of Chovevei Torah, has a lot more people giving lectures to help you. I don't know how much you can be helped because life experience is more important than anything. But all right, they can give you guidelines, parameters. So Reb Lazer knew the world. His own son, Reb David Leib, who became rabbi in Harrisburg and remained there all his life. I think he was rabbi in Harrisburg over 60 years, on to 70 years. I think it was 67 years. I mean, just think what I'm telling you. So his own son was a YU product. Reb Lazer knew all the YU mismachim. Reb Lazer was very friendly with the Rav, with Rabbi Revel. He was a Yudapeyish, Agudas Rabbanim. But he had respect. He constantly pleaded, compromise, join together, don't push the young Rabbanim away. And Reb Lazer refused to sign. The basic reason why he refused to sign, because he felt this was not really L'shem Shemayim, it was smacking the face of Yeshiva University. And here you have to stand, this goes on until today. A volume just came out, a Talmud lent it to me, and I have a Yetzirah to read all this biographical literature and memoir literature on Reb Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg, the Rosh Yeshiva of our Torah, someone I knew, I taught with his brother Reb Shmuel. And it's a beautiful 500 plus page biography. There is absolutely no positive mention of Yeshiva Shibs Chochana. It's beyond comprehension. Talk about YU, MTA, it was the only game in town. All the future Gedolim of America came from there. Rabbi Avigdor Miller, Rabbi Nassim Wachfold, the Mashgiach, and I write about him in Washington. He used to regale me with stories of Yeshiva Shibs Chochana in his time in the 20s. And like, YU doesn't exist. They don't give it any credit whatsoever. Today, Torah Vadas celebrated 100 years. There's no mention. It's like Torah Vadas grew out of nowhere. And in this book on Rabbi Steinberg, RJJ is the first yeshiva in America. It's a total lie. Yeshiva Shibs Chochana goes back to Eitz Chaim 1886. RJJ is 1902. Please, don't play games. Even a dummy like Rakefet knows that. But you see, they can't view YU. It's not a yeshiva. It's not a makom kodesh. It's not a makom Torah. Because you have a high school and a college under one roof. All right, a high school everyone has to have in America. But at least in MTA, they teach you something. I've been in branches of Lakewood that have a high school. They give me a tour and boast to me that it's all a bluff. The afternoon, they spend a half hour on mathematics, a half hour on English, and that's it. And somehow they get along with the state because of their political power, voting power. You remember democracy, those of you familiar with Alexis de Tocqueville's critique of American democracy before the Civil War, this French political scientist. What he wrote then so many years ago is absolutely true, absolutely true. A democracy today, Satma, imagine kids in New York can die from a Brit Mila because they have mitzitza bepeh. How did they have mitzitza bepeh? Reb Chaim Briscoe was opposed. Reb Moshe Soloveitchik was opposed. The Rav was opposed. The list goes on and on. And today you can do mitzitza with a tube. You can solve all problems. Not the way they did it all the ages. New kids get infected. God have mercy. Kids have died. But no mayor's willing to take them on because it's 50,000 votes on block. So this is power. This determines. And why you today, a college under one roof, all right, give credit. Reb Lazer Silva gave credit. And he felt that this was an attack on YU. Now, you have to understand that YU, the average mismach, I got a question. If Yomo remembers all the emails we've answered, so recently I got an email from Perth, Australia. A Talmud listening, and many Talmudim in Australia, fine. It's not a Chabadnik. This is, he heads up a modern, it's called a modern Orthodox day school. Yomo went to the website. I called him rabbi. Turns out he doesn't have smicha, but he said he learned here in Israel and he met many Talmudim of the Rav. And how come Talmudim, he mentioned many names, don't have beards? And yet, when you look in the modern era, the Talmudim in YU more or less have beards. As I see sitting in front of me, 3 out of 4 are sitting here with beards, and I assume these beards are because of Torah reasons, not because of Avelot or God forbid or anything else. Okay, I should say 4 out of 5, excuse me. let me give Yomo credit. So he asked me a legitimate question. Are you allowed to shave, not allowed to shave? So I don't know if he was, you know, giving me a shtuck because I don't have a beard. But I answered him seriously. I showed him the Gemara in Ma'ikat, and I said, you see, people shaved. I spoke about the Ramchal. I'm not in bad company, considering the Baal, the author of Mesilta Sherm didn't have a beard, etc. So, you see pictures of Mir, of Kletzk, of the Yeshivat in Europe, who had a beard. It was unheard of. All right, so then they say, well, Rakefet, you should have grown up. All right, I never grew up. I admit it. I'm still sitting, the rubber sitting right here. Don't forget that. So I never grew up, Baruch Hashem. But you see, it was a different era. Why you graduates, again, you're in a time warp. You represent, to me, my Rebbeim and my Rebbeim. That I should one day see my picture up in a sukkah in Harnov. I mean, it's crazy. Who the heck is Rakefet? He can give you Joe DiMaggio's batting average. That's about all he knows. 325. Anyway, so this is serious. So, you see, you're a product of your time. You can't judge the YU Mismach of today. What was 60, 70 years ago? 1950s, the average YU Mismach was Shema Mitzvah. He fought for Torah. He spoke well. He didn't have a beard. And he belonged to a mixed board of rabbis. Now, by the late 50s, mid-50s, Teira Vadas has grown. Chaim Berlin has grown. They have students. It's a swing to the right. They want to put rabbis into shtelas. There are many young Israels. And young Israel ultimately moves much more to the right. And Reb Lazer Silva felt it was to give YU a shtach, that you're not real rabbis, you sit with conservative reform. And he refused to sign. Now, this story with Reb Lazer Silva is an ongoing story. he sensed, you got to understand, this is a man that in the 20s and the 30s, the 40s, was the premier Rav in the world, I would say. No one had as much influence as Rav Lezer Silva. Here's a man who organized the Vat Hatzalah. You have any idea what this meant? The Vat Hatzalah, the money that had to be raised, how they got the Mir Yeshiva out, how they got them to Shanghai, the lives they saved. This was single-handedly Rav Lezer Silva. He's the one, if you recall my lectures, he's the one that sent Dr. Shmuel Schmidt to Europe. And you're overwhelmed what this man accomplished. Then he went into the DP camps after World War II. His Senator Taft, the Senate made him an official army personnel so that he would be wearing a uniform, as you saw from the picture, and his life would be saved. He was there in kilts during the pogroms. He was in Poland. But people were afraid, a man with an army uniform, United States Army, although he had a beard and he looked Jewish, he looked like a Rav, but the uniform, very important. This man, one of a kind. The families he saved, the money he gave out, and his Chochmat Chaim, he would give out money, he'd meet someone in the DP camps, and some of you can be descendants. You meet someone, a man, he lost his wife, he lost his children. He is so depressed. And Reb Lezer says, look, I want to help you. What do you want to do? And whatever it is, he leaves him with $100 bill. But before he gives him the money, he says, you got to promise me you'll remarry and raise a second family. And do you know how many families remarried and had children because of Reb Lezer? The man was indefatigable. And now he refuses to sign. But this is a whole gradual process. He saw what was happening. In 1952, the Agudas HaRabbanim has their annual convention, and the Agudas HaRabbanim then were all practicing rabbis. There were many shtelas where they didn't want an English-speaking rabbi. The Balabatnim, their native language was Yiddish. They looked at American rabbi, beardless and sophisticated. This is Harav, this is a rabbi. No, they wanted it. But it's shifting times now. And he gets up in 52 and he says, I don't want to stand for office. I don't want to be reelected. And he speaks about this week. We read the Torah portion of, I'm quoting from my book, the Sylvia Era, page 292. This week we read the Torah portion of Vayishlach between the portions of Vayetze and Vayeshev. And he says, for the last 35 years, I've been sent by you to be your leader, to be a Rav. I worked hard in America. I worked hard in Europe. I worked hard after the Holocaust. But now it's time, he says, Vayeshev, I have to leave. I want to prepare my writings for publication. Elect new people, younger people. And then he goes on to say, but let me caution you, we will only survive as an organization if we build bridges of cooperation with our young sons in the rabbinate in order to include them in our holy work. And this was Reb Lezer Silva pleading, don't push the young rabbis away. Let's unite with the RCA. See, he sensed the shift, what was happening in America. You have second, third, fourth generation Jews going to Orthodox synagogues. They're not going to relate to a Rav whose native language is Yiddish. Don't push the youngsters away. They may be clean shaven. They speak English. They may not be the greatest Lamdanim. Although I have to tell you, you got to give tremendous respect to Yeshiva University. They have turned out Lamdanim that are equal to anything the European Yeshiva turned out. If you read my work on the Rav, I translate that. I can't go into it now, but the Rav boasts that his Talmidim in America would have been great in Volozhin. And I always used to say, I'm not sure he's right, but a Rebbe's allowed to boast. But the kernel of what he's saying, the gist, the nuclei, is absolutely correct. We have turned down Tlamdana Mufakim, please. So, but the answer, but Adegres Rabbanim at that time would refuse to recognize this. And the wind-up was that Reb Leizer Silver became, I write about it later, but Agudas Yisrael, he became persona grata and persona non grata. You understand? They already couldn't relate to him like they did in the 30s, the 40s, because the world was shifting. Now, in 52, they elected a new presidium, and Reb Leizer, the head of it, Reb Yisrael Rosenberg, an old-timer, the well-known rabbi, and Reb Moshe Rosen. He was Rav in Brooklyn in a small shul, a Gaon Adir, one of the greatest Gaonim to come to America. He wrote many Sfarim. So they wouldn't let Reb Leizer go. But in 56, the world came to an end. And that's the total shift of Agudas HaRabbanim. Ultimately, Agudas HaRabbanim basically is out of business today because there are no more rabbis of this type holding shtelas. And it's the total swing to the right you can see happening before your eyes. 56, the same year of the Cheirim against Board of Rabbis and Synagogue Council. And here, I have to admit my sins. There was a tremendous campaign on. They want to elect an entire new slate. These practicing rabbis, even for the Agudas Rabbanim, they're no longer our dream, our leaders. We have great Rashi Yeshiva in America. Rashi Yeshiva, who should be our leaders? And there was a bitter battle within the Agudas HaRabbanim and campaigning going on. By 55, 56, I was a mature individual. We were following what's happening eagerly. And finally, the day of the convention came, and all the Rabbanim, all the Rosh Yeshiva, all the teachers were up all night. The meeting began. It was in a hotel in Rockaway, Far Rockaway, kosher hotel. I think it was called the Washington Hotel. Lenny, you can correct me. I don't recall, but I believe. And they brought them out from the Bronx, from Manhattan. You understand what traveling meant, the subways till the last stop. And all our Rebbeim from Yeshivas Hanan, the Yudapeisha, Rabbi Chenich Fishman, Rabbi Noach Bornstein, Rabbi Yeruchim Gerelik, they were all there. I don't believe Rabbi Shmuel Volkman, but it could be checked out. And we knew they were up all night. And the next day, we're in Shir, and there's Rabbi Noach Bornstein, and we couldn't resist. We go over, Rebbe, you know, good geschlafen, Banach? Did you sleep well at night? And he's looking at us, and we both knew what we were speaking about. And Chata'ay ani maskir hayom, I ate my Rebbe's heart out. Very, very, very not nice. But what could we do? We're youth, we're kids, we knew what was going on. And the Rashi Yeshiva conquered the day. This time, who was elected? All right, Reb Leizer Silver, they wouldn't get rid of him. There was too much Hakarat HaTov. As much as they struggled with his views and their reality, or his reality and their views, no, Reb Leizer Silver, Reb Pinchas Mordechai Teitz of Elizabeth, New Jersey. Vic, Rabbi Teitz, was second to Rabbi Silva. He never became the world personality, but he built a kehillah, he built a community, he built day schools, right or wrong, he built Elizabeth, whatever you have in New Jersey, goes back to Rabbi Teitz. All right, he was elected, and then a Rosh Yeshiva Who? That's Suvalka Rav, Reb David Lifshitz, Yeshiva University, Yeshiva's Reb Yitzchak Ochanan. And there they could say, no, we're electing a Rav, Suvalka Rav. Only one problem, he hasn't set foot in Suvalk since 1939, but now you understand, 1940, Lower Lane, he was a great individual. I don't want anyone, Reb David Lifshitz, to have known the man was to have known great greatness. Oh, what an individual. And he fit into YU like a glove on a hand. It was a beautiful match. And he was one of the few Rashi Yeshiva who survived the change to English. As Rakefer has said many times, and I challenge anyone to prove that man wrong. When the Rav switched to English in 1960 due to Danny Greer, you've all heard the story from me, it's written up I could be in Washington too, but in my work on the Rav switched to English, that was the death knell of Torah in America, because you guys are a klishlishi. I'm a klisheni. Ich hab nur gehört, du schürte mein Jiddisch, ich hab gewinn a Stück la Europäische. I was a bit of a European, even though I'm a third generation American. You guys know Yiddish, you guys know what went on in Volozhin, you guys know what went on in Mir. I'm a klisheni, you're a klishlishi. Absolutely. And the other Rebbein was a death knell, because Reb Noach Feinstein ultimately had no influence. Reb Shmuel Lezer Volker, I can't go into detail now, ultimately sued the yeshiva. Reb Yeruchim Gerelik, they all became has-beens. But Reb David Lifshitz, thanks to Israel, students were now coming back from Kerem Biavne, was the first yeshiva in Israel that had some Americans. Who diber Vrit? When I read his biography, the family just put out a fabulous volume that should be widely circulated. It gives you such insight to what Europe was like, what the war was like, what going to America was like, what Israel is like, who remained from, who didn't. Reb David Lifshitz in his youth was a Hebraic scholar, and Hebrew to him was a second language after Yiddish. And he was able to haratzot b'yivrit, meduberet, Huhitzliach, Reb David remained till the end of his life beloved and influential. So these were the Rashi, the head of Agudat HaRabbanim. And 4 years later, everything changed. By then, the Agudat HaRabbanim made up its mind, the Rashi Yeshiva count, and they had a new presidium. Expanded it to 5, and you added on to the presidium Reb Aaron Cutler, Reb Moshe Feinstein, later Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky took Reb Aaron Cutler's place. He died in 62, and it was a new Agudas HaRabbanim, Synagogue Council, New York Board of Rabbis, the change in Agudas HaRabbanim, the swing to the right, the self-confidence. This changed the face of Western Orthodoxy in the Western world. To a certain degree, it changed the face of Yeshiva University. And today in the State of Israel, the problem haunts us once again. Now, to understand just a little bit more the difference, you talk about Reb Lezer Silva and the swing to the right. I can illustrate it, and you'll go into the Suvir, you'll go to my published work, you can get all the sources at the Agudah, at Agudas HaRabbanim convention. Reb Aaron Cutler gets up, and he makes an impassioned plea that the only language we should teach our children Torah in is Yiddish. Yiddish has been sanctified by the Jews using it all of Europe. It's an echo of the Ridbaz. If you're familiar with the Ridbaz, again, I'm sorry for mentioning all my publications, but what can I do? It's the only place you can get this information. The Ridbaz came to America, remember, 1902 approximately. Reb Yaakov ben David Zev Volovsky, Ridbaz, Reb Yaakov David ben Zev Volovsky, went with the acronym afterwards, the Ridbaz, the Rav of Slutsk. The founder, who here learned in Lakewood? If you learned in Lakewood, you learned in Slutz. Slutz was the original yeshiva, then it moved to Kletz to escape the communists. Rabbarin was Kletzka Rosh Yeshiva and reestablished Kletz in Lakewood. Kletz was reestablished in two places, by Rabbarin in Lakewood and by Rabbi Zalman Meltzer's family. Yeshivat HaDarom in Rehovot was originally called Yeshivat Kletz, which today became a Hesder Yeshiva, etc. It's amazing because it's two different worlds. One was Agudat Yisrael, and the one in Israel, Rabbi Zalman's family, great, great Mizrahi institutions. And Rabbarin was adamant that, you imagine, American kids, you want to teach Torah, every yeshiva, every Talmud Torah, min daf mitzeinah, redden Yiddish, only to speak Yiddish. Rav Lezer Silva would get up after Rabbarin that this is incorrect. They're kids that don't understand Yiddish. What do we want? To send them away, to chase them away, to kick them away? Where are they going to learn Torah? And we should absolutely teach in English as well, when that is the language that the children understood. And this gives you feeling and insight what was going on, what was developing, how the sands were shifting, and Reb Lezer refused to sign the Cherem. So it's not just the Rav who didn't sign, but the Rav of America, he didn't sign as well. There's someone else who didn't sign. And I want to thank William Gavirz, but I want him to know, I know this, but he wrote to me something that Rabbarin said, Rabbarin Lichtenstein, and beautiful. Who refused to sign? And here you need a little bit of history, which I'll go into when we finish this topic. We're going to shift gears and go into Torah Vedas and Torah Mesorah. Reb Reuven Grzybski. Who was Reb Reuven Grzybski? One of the great Litvisha Rashi Yeshiva, was a son-in-law of Reb Baruch Ber Leibovich. But it's more than that. If you're familiar with Making of a Gadol by my dear friend, the late Reb Nassim Kamenetsky, Zeicher Tzadik Levracha, he saved Rabbarin, Eli, close the door. He saved Rabbarin Kotler from Lo Aleinu, would have gone to the university in Moscow, joined his sister. I don't want to go further, no telling what he would have become on a religious level. As you know, his sister, even in her old age in the United States, had sich bakluk, to go and explain that in English, complained, cried that her brother could have been the greatest mathematician in the world, and instead he's a kleiner rebbe, he's a little rebbe. And this was already said to friends of mine, Rab visiting her in the late 50s, 60s. And Rabbarin was already decided to get on the wagon and get onto the train and go to Moscow. And they say Reb Reuven Grzybski pulled him off, pleaded with him, and he remained in Slabatka. And you owe all of Lakewood goes back to Reb Reuven Grzybski. Reb Reuven Grzybski, I mean, finally got to America. By the way, you can always bring breakfast to class. This is postgraduate, and you honor me by coming. And Rosh Chodesh, like tomorrow, if the class begins, I begin on time. I have to begin on time. Too many people are listening all over. But I also have to begin on time because I have busy days. It's not that. I'm a latest gay. Baruch Hashem. But you can always bring breakfast to class. Gizem techeit. For my money, cater a breakfast, bring them in, and eat la kavod la teferet. Vic, my birthday is coming up. What are we going to do about your bottle this year? Every year we have a bottle and cake. We celebrate. I've told them, been with me many years because I don't repeat a shir and here. All right, this year. Anyway, Reb Reuven Grzybski got to America. He wound up a Rosh Hashiva in Torah V'das. For from Torah Vidas, they opened up Beit Medrash Elyon in Spring Valley. This is how Muncie begins. Muncie, Spring Valley. They wanted a place to have a kollel where you could learn and not be disturbed by anyone. And Rav Reuven Gazovsky headed up the kollel. Rav Reuven was one of the Gedolei Yisrael in America. Read the book that just came out, The 100 Years of Torah Vidas. And Rav Reuven Gazovsky refused to sign. Do you know why he refused to sign? He's the one name missing. Art Scroll totally will not tell you this. It's very simple. Rav Reuven Gazovsky knew the Rav. He had tremendous derech eretz for the Rav. And you know, he differs with the Rav. Hashgacha differences, fine. But in learning, the Rav was the Rav. And he said that we have no right to tell the Rav what to advise his students. We can't interfere. Yeshiva University has this approach, the Rav has this approach. Let the Rav decide for his students as he understands. We have no right to interfere. Now, Yeshiva, we can tell them, you can't belong to the Board of Rabbis. But to go and put a cherem and to cause all this anxiety with YU, he refused to sign. So Dr. Gavirtz tells me that he heard from Aaron Lichtenstein that this is here. So Rav Reuven Gazovsky refused to sign. Who was Rav Reuven Gazovsky? I told you, the son-in-law of Reb Baruch Ben Leibowitz, the Talmud Mufak of Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. When I learned in Lakewood, Reb Reuven Grzebski's son, Reb Chaim Grzebski, I remember him like yesterday. He was one of the great Talmudim of Reb Aaron. His daughter married Yitzi Lichtenstein. Are you aware of that? Rabbi Yitzchak Lichtenstein, today the son of Reb Aaron, the son who left Israel and today is the Rosh Yeshiva of Torah Vidas, right? He is married to Rav Baruch Ben Leibowitz's great-granddaughter. And Rav Aaron said to Bill Gvirtz, he then added, perhaps that is why my Rav Yitzi married Rav Reuven's granddaughter. Okay? So that's an interesting comment. Rav Reuven Gazovsky refused to sign, and perhaps the Ribbono Shel Olam rewarded him that his granddaughter should marry a great-grandson of Rav Chaim Brisker, his father, the grandfather's Rebbe, Baruch Ben Leibowitz's Rebbe. If you ever learn Birchat Shmuel, right, I trust you've occasionally seen the tremendous derech eretz that Rav Baruch Ben had for his Rebbe, Rav Chaim. And this is Rav Yitzchak. And you see, ultimately, Torah Vidas had to pull a Rosh Yeshiva, the Rosh Yeshiva, to try to resuscitate it on a high level today. A smicha from where? Yeshiva Shabtzchelchan and Yitzi Lichtenstein. All right, he's a right winger. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not turning into a YU personality. Tova Lichtenstein, the greatest compliment I ever got in my life is from Dr. Tova Soloveitchik Lichtenstein. She said, Arnold, you accomplished what no one else in the world ever accomplished. I looked at her. She said, my Yitzi stayed up all night reading the Silver Era. He has never read another book in English, but that book he couldn't put down. So that's Rav Yitzchak. It's an amazing family, because out of Rav Aaron came Rav Yitzchak Lichtenstein, Torah Vidas, Rav Moshe Lichtenstein, the Gush, a son, Rav Meir in Beit Shemesh, a big shul, and he also teaches, and each one is different. Each one is different. Each one is different. There's another son who works for Mizrad Chinuch, as I understand, Shai, who was born here, I still remember his Brit, and then the two girls are Rashi Yeshiva. They, for women, they also teach women, and Esti and Tanya, right or wrong, and Esti Lichtenstein, and Kleinekite, the Migdal Oz, And Tanya just had that article that I quoted a few weeks ago in Tradition, or where did I see it? In Tradition. I saw it in Tradition, right? So, very fascinating. Out of one family, look at the six children, how they divided. Okay. Baruch Hashem. Gentlemen, what was the Scherim? Who signed it? And here I quote another volume. I trust the name means something to you. A Fire in His Soul by Amos Bunin. Now, let me give you a drop of background. Amos I knew quite well. I know his sisters very well. Irvin Bunin was a balabas in the United States. And this is a man who did well in business and remained a frum Jew, 100%. Very active in all causes that perpetuated Torah. Active in Young Israel. His own son Amos is a smusmach of Yeshiva University. In my time, he's older than me. He's not alive, unfortunately. But in my time, when Reb Aaron came to America, he picked up Balabatim, he became their Rebbe Mufak. One of the Balabatim he picked up was Amos Bunin, was Irvin Bunin, Yitzchak Bunin, the father of Amos. Amos wrote a biography of his father. It's a very fair biography. It's not just a child glorifying a father. It's written as honestly as a child can write. A Fire in His Soul. I highly recommend it. I believe Feldheim published it. And I highly recommend it. If you haven't read it, it's important to read it and study it. And I'm quoting from page 383. We have been asked by a number of rabbis in the country and by alumni and mismachim yeshivas if it is permissible to participate and be a member of the New York Board of Rabbis and similar groups in other communities who are composed of Reform and Conservative rabbis. Having gathered together to clarify this matter, it has been ruled by the undersigned that it is forbidden, listen to the words, forbidden by the law of our sacred Torah to be a member of and participate in such an organization. We have also been asked if it is permissible to participate and to be a member of the Synagogue Council of America, which is also composed of Reform and Conservative organizations. We have ruled that it is forbidden by the law of our sacred Torah to participate with them either as an individual or as an organized communal body. May Hashem Yitbarach have mercy on His people and seal the breaches in Torah life, and may we be worthy of the elevation of the glory of our sacred Torah and our people Israel. Signed this fifth day, the week of Parshat Tisah, the 18th day of Adar, 5716, in the city of New York. Now, look at the people who signed. These were the top people in the Litvish world. Outside of the names we mentioned who didn't sign, you have everyone. The first signature, Reb Moshe Feinstein. You all know where Reb Moshe was. By 56, he was the Posek of America. Until the 50s, you turn to Rabbi Yosef Eliyahu Henkin. Rav Henkin was on in years already. Rav Henkin did not publish that much like Reb Moshe. What we have, there are a few Sfarim, but they were limited. He dealt with civil marriage, that where he differed with Reb Moshe. You have an entire sefer like that. You have what he published, Minhagim, for Ezra's Torah. It became a fundraiser to have his book on various laws and Minhagim. He did publish. But Rav Moshe already was answering Sheilot, not by the tens, but by the hundreds weekly. Rav Avram Yaffin, the Navadik of Rosh Yeshiva. Now, Navadik was a unique, again, we'll get to it, please, the Ribbono Shel Olam. I have a lot prepared on Navadik, but let it be said, Navadik was Shiflat Adam. It was a unique type of Musa, and it reopened in America with limited success. Today, you might still have something in Borough Park named Navadik and something in Israel, but it's not mainstream. It's not one of the stars of our Torah civilization. For obvious reasons, the Navadik Musa, Meisha, did you ever learn in Navadik? You know what they would tell you in Navadik here? I'm going to give you 10 shekel, go into the drugstore and ask for a kilo of potatoes. Did you ever hear about that? Okay, you didn't understand why they did that. Why? So people will laugh at you, and then, you know, you get used to it, because people go, you're a Shema Torah mitzvah. People will laugh at you. What? You're makpin in kashrut today? Everything is clean. The factories are under government supervision. You're makpin on Shabbos? Why? We can have the greatest Shabbos in the world. A little music, a little singing, ordering a pizza, heat it up. Why? We find a shalom. People laugh at you. Laugh at you? I don't give a hoot if you laugh. I want a kilo potatoes. You may be a drugstore, etc., etc. All right, that was Rav Avram Yaffin. Rav Avram Kalmanovich. No, who was Rav Avram Kalmanovich? He recreated Mir in America. He was the president of Mir in Europe. He was not the Rosh Yeshiva, but he got to America fundraising. He stayed, and he single-handedly, I would say, second only to Reb Lazer Silva in saving people, in yelling and shouting and screaming. He's the one who went to Washington and Henry Morgenthau, the Secretary of the Treasury, I believe, and he was an assimilated Jew, Morgenthau, the generations without Torah, and he needed help, and Morgenthau couldn't respond properly, and he started crying, and fainted on his desk. And he brought Morgenthau back to his Jewish origins. He helped immensely afterwards. It's you got to understand Reb Avram Kalmanovich. Then he organized Mir. Reb Yitzvei was his son-in-law. Reb Yitzvei was married to Devorah Kalmanovich. And he organized Mir in America, which you still have, all right? You see, in America today, all the yeshivas suffer because they can't compete with the Israel. What Mir and Brisk have to offer, you don't have in America. So all these yeshivas today, this is why with Rabbi Yitzchak Lichtenstein, they hope to resuscitate Torah Vedas. It once was a real top quality yeshiva. Today in America, all you have is Lakewood. The fellas who come back go to Lakewood. The ones that are already influenced by the Western world go to Neir Yisrael, where they can get a college degree. And the ones that are willing to be exposed to Aaron Rakefet and people like him, so they go to YU, where the college and the yeshiva are under one roof. But Rabbanka, he reorganized me. This is where we said, we started an hour plus, an hour and 15 minutes ago, we said Reb Avram Silver studied in me, Reb Meir Kahane studied in me. The next signature, Reb Aaron Kotlach, all right, I don't have to go further. The man who changed the modern Torah world in America, certainly, and influence all over the world. Reb Gedalia Shor, who was Reb Gedalia Shor? Teira Vadas, the Rosh Yeshiva. Reb Aaron said about him that he was the first American trained gadol, because he was raised in America, he came here as a youngster, and he became Reb Gedalia Shor, not a small matter, and Teira Vadas Rosh Yeshiva. Reb David Lifshitz, could you imagine? Now you're already in shoes of Tzolcharon. Reb David Lifshitz signed. Reb Chaim Mordechai Katz, towns, Reb Chaim Mordechai Katz and Reb Elia Bloch, they were stranded in America. They were here fundraising. They couldn't get back to Europe. Their families were wiped out. We're talking wife, endless children. Reb Bloch already was not alive, Reb Elia Meir Bloch. But Reb Mordechai Katz, and he tells then, was very big. This is something you don't comprehend today. Tells in the suburb of Cleveland was a tremendous attraction. Kids went to Tells from good homes. They wanted the kid to have a good high school education. They went to Cleveland. I had many, the best kids in YU, some of them are in bands, like Tzadok, was a Tells graduate. Goldstein, Dr. Goldstein, my classmate who was the Rebbe's doctor, Zeicher Tzadok Livracha, was a Tells graduate. You don't know the pool. And this was Reb Mordechai Katz. He was Shichmo Lamala Mikol Ha'am. He remarried, had a second fair. I trust he had a second. I know he raised kids from his wife. She was a survivor too with kids, and he raised them like his own. I trust maybe they had children together. Maybe I'm wrong. But that was Reb Mordechai Katz. He signed Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky. Oh, Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky, this was already Litvish. This was Rabbi Aaron Kutler's Chavruta in his youth. He was part of the Chabura with Rabbi Grzebski, with Rabbi Aaron Slabotka. This is Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky, who originally was in Toronto. He had great influence. Machon Lev stands because of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. You know what I'm talking about? Professor Zev Lev, who was his Rebbe? Who influenced him in Toronto? Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky. From there, they brought him to America, Teiriv Adas and Munsey. This is Reb Yaakov. And Reb Yaakov, his influence, the stories about him, he was integrated into modern life. He saw kids on bicycles. He rejoiced. Nothing. Halavai, we could have had it in Europe. He was in suburbia. He was, what an individual, Munsey. And he signed. Rabbi Yaakov, Rabbi Yitzchak Halevi Ruderman, no, this is Nei Yisrael. This book just came out of Rabbi Chaim Pinchas Steinberg. He should have only called me. I would have given him basic facts. He has it all. Ribbono Shel Olam, what was the second advanced yeshiva that was a fallout from yeshivas? Rabbi Yitzchak Chanan on a very high level, New Haven, Connecticut. Rabbi Levenberg, Rabbi Sheftel Kramer, who was a Rebbe there for a year or two after he came to America. First he sat in the Beis Medrash Yosef Chochanan, then he was a Rebbe in New Haven. Gentlemen, Reb Shmuel Belkin, the second president of Yeshiva University. From there he went on to Rhode Island, got his doctorate, etc. But and New Haven, it didn't succeed. So they moved it to Cleveland. Reb Sheftel Kramer moved it to Cleveland. And there was a nucleus there, but it didn't succeed. Reb Sheftel Kramer's son-in-law moved it to Baltimore. His name, Rav Ruderman Slabotka, Yitzchak Halevi Ruderman, and Nei Yisrael in Baltimore. What a success story. They took over the whole city. Nei Yisrael, Baltimore, synonymous with each other. All right? And he signed. Rabbi Yitzchak Kuttner. Who was Rabbi Yitzchak Kuttner? Rosh Yeshiva, Chaim Berlin, one of the most famous Rosh Yeshiva, then the Baal Machshava, the philosopher, the Maimarim, the Pachad Yitzchak, Baruch HaTov Adonai Melech HaOlam SheHakol Nehyeh BeDvarav. He signed. And finally, coming back to Yeshiva University, Reb Menachem Mendel Sachs, the Bochen. I was privileged to be tested by him as a student, and I was privileged to have my classes tested by him as a Rosh Yeshiva in the Yeshiva. Who is Reb Mendel Sachs? The Chafetz Chaim's son-in-law. Not a small matter. Rav Machen Menendel Sachs, the Chafetz Chaim's son-in-law. Not a small matter. And the history of Torah in America here is very fascinating, because Rabbi Menachem Mendel Zaks actually was involved in opening the first kollel, the first influence on a practical level of Europe. It was a kollel in White Plains, and he was the head of it, and some of the Talmidim were European refugees who had arrived in America. Reb Mendel Zaks was very well known. But he wasn't the right person in the right place. It didn't take off. But from that nucleus came Lakewood. When Reb Aaron was ready, when he saw there was no one else you could save in Europe, and he's ready already to go back to Habatzat HaTorah, not Hatzalah, we're talking 1943, when there's no way to save anyone anymore, he went to Lakewood with that nucleus from White Plains. Now, ultimately, Rav Zaks needed Panasa. And here he had a miracle that the new president, Rosh Yeshiva of YU, was his Talmud from Rotten, Rav Shmuel Belkin. So Rav Shmuel Belkin took him into YU as the Bochein. Was he ever totally at home in YU? I have to be honest, I doubt it. I knew his sons, I knew his grandchildren. I doubt it. I don't want to repeat what one grandson once said to me. But, you know, to make a living, you do things. I'll put it that way. I'm not quoting him correctly, but I'm giving you the gist. He was never totally at home. It's not like Rav David Lifshitz. Rav David Lifshitz was totally at home in YU. Rav Moshe Shatzkis, the Lom Shurav, who was alive at this time. He died in the, I believe it was 58, but he was at home in YU. He was at home. But with Mendel Zaks, never totally at home. I remember well the shouting and the yelling, the fighting in the hallway over the dean's reception, and he was opposed, and the Rav was in favor, and I could sense he wasn't totally at home. But nevertheless, he was at Shkol Hanan, and he too, so you wind up having people who signed, and among the 11 signatures, two are members of the Yeshivat Reb Yitzchak Elchanan faculty. All right? This was the Litvisha world. What about the Hasidic world? And here you have to understand, in America at that time, there were two Hasidic Rebbeim to talk about. Bava was not yet what it was today. The two to talk about, the Lubavitcher and the Satmar. Satmar to be involved in this doesn't make sense, because a Satmar Chassid is never going to bunk into a reformer or conservative rabbi. So, I mean, it's a given they're opposed, but to the best of my knowledge, he never came out with a public statement. Obviously, he was in total agreement, but it was not Shaykh, it was not in his world, not in his ballpark, the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And here I have to say, to the Lubavitcher Rebbe's credit, Lubavitch is very different. Lubavitch, if I can paraphrase what I said in the 2 years I lectured on him, he really went back to the original Chassidus. Original Chassidus was outreach, going after every Jew, capturing him, bringing him back to Torah, B'Lev V'Nefesh. Ultimately, Chassidus today is just the opposite, hiding from the world, building a ghetto, building what I call a portable ghetto, etc., etc. The Rebbe, his whole life was outreach. If you went into the Rebbe and said, Rebbe, this Jew, barely Jewish, doesn't observe anything, the Rebbe would cut you off and say, this is the way you speak about someone descended from Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah. It's total outrage. And to the great credit of the Rebbe, he took stands. And remember, because he was involved in total outrage, because he became a national, then an international organization, he needed money. And he was getting money and still gets money, reform, conservative, people saw Chabad, the honest, good work, outreach, never critical, etc. You can criticize Chabad from today to tomorrow, because people, but I'm not here to criticize. I'm here to see the good they did. All right, true. People who drive to shul on Shabbos park a block away, but maybe you influence. In the course of time, they'll stop driving. And Chabad, and nevertheless, he took stands, he took positions, he didn't budge, he didn't, pardon me, give a hoot about what the reforming conservative, and could have cut off millions of dollars. Didn't care. The Vah Hashem was more important to him. And here I'll show you a letter he wrote. And let me show you the letter on top of it. This is a letter from 1977. Fairmount Temple in Cleveland, Ohio. Rabbi Arthur J. Levliveld, if I'm pronouncing it right, the very famous Reform rabbi. A temple that was one of the classic masterpieces of architecture. And in 1977, he found a letter that was delivered to him 20 years after it was sent. All right? This happens. You read about it in books. And this Reform rabbi now turned this into a public letter. To my colleagues and friends, the attached letter written almost 20 years ago reached me yesterday with a New York postmark and no return address. Nevertheless, it is of interest in that it states clearly the true position of Chabad with respect to conservative and reform Judaism. I shall preach on this subject on April 15th. Hey, you know, he's sending this letter around. Know who our enemies are. And here's the letter in reply to, it's the Rebbe's stationery. Here's a clearer copy that someone else received, because the letter evidently was a form letter that was sent to anyone who asked the Rebbe. In reply, the letter is from 1959. In reply to your inquiry as to whether or not there has been any change in my stand towards the affiliation of Orthodox rabbis or synagogues with the New York Board of Rabbis or Synagogue Council, I wish to assure you that there has not, underlined, not been, nor could there be, any change in my stand on this vital and far-reaching question. My considered opinion, as I have reiterated it on several occasions privately and publicly, is based on the undisputable halachic decision formulated by the Rambam, Hilchot Tshuva 3:8, according to which the doctrines and ideology of the conservative reform movements can only be classed in the category of heretical movements which have plagued our people at one time or another, only to disappear again, having no basis in our everlasting Torah. Toras Emes, I'm saying it the way it's written, Toras Chaim. I have clearly stated my view that membership in the New York Board of Rabbis or St. Council of America or similar religious bodies strikes deeply at the roots of true Judaism. Such membership cannot escape the logical inference that the conservative and reform movements are recognized by the Orthodox members of the said bodies as belonging within the fold of true Judaism, differing only in degree or in minor details. Whereas in truth, these movements deny the very basis of true Judaism. Protestations to the contrary can only be regarded as empty words refuted by actions. May God enlighten the eyes of those who still waver on this vital question to remedy the situation without delay, I hope and pray that everyone, both rabbi and layman, will use his utmost influence in that direction. With blessing, M.M. Schneerson. My dear students, a dear Talmud of mine, Rabbi Nachum Shmayahu Sajak, sent me a whole printout. These are endless letters and sources where the Lubavitcher Rebbe writes and speaks against Synagogue Council and New York Board of Rabbis. You've got to give the Rebbe all the credit in the world. Money did not sway him. And I can tell you what I lived through in the early 70s, right here. Well, the world already was smaller. We knew what was going on. The early 70s was the tremendous, the late 60s, early 70s. I lived it. I lived it here. I already had many students, spoke about it. Who was a Jew? And remember the case before the Supreme Court, the lieutenant colonel in the Israeli Navy who married a Polish non-Jewish woman when he was attached to the Israeli embassy in Warsaw. And his kids were born and she refused to convert. She said, I don't believe in God. I'm an agnostic. I'm an atheist. And she said, I don't want to convert. I want to fool the rabbis. And he went to the Supreme Court and the court ruled his kids born to an un-Jewish mother are Jewish. I don't want to go into details now. I've spoken about it many times. It was based upon the concept. It was a 5-4 ruling that who is a Jew is a secular concept. And a kid growing up in Israel, speaking Hebrew, serving in the Israeli army, who has a Jewish father, he is a Jew. And tremendous battle in the government, and finally they revised the law to read who is a Jew, born to a Jewish mother who has, or someone who has, a woman who has converted. And tremendous battle broke out. I remember my heart was broken when Mizrahi compromised. Mizrahi that raised me, Bnei Akiva that raised me. Who is a Jew born to a Jewish mother or converted? Converted. What does converted mean? Had to be converted al pi halacha in consonance with Jewish practice throughout the ages. And bit of fight, and Mizrahi caved in. I remember one Mizrahi leader, pardon me, the idiot saying, who is a Jew converted? Converted is a halachic concept. Idiot. You're dealing with the Supreme Court of Israel. To them, converted is a halacha concept. Spell it out. They did not. And I remember the Rebbe remained firm and people threatened him. You're going to lose a fortune of money. The modern Orthodox, the conservative, the reform. And the Rebbe said, for money, you don't sell Torah. Down the drain. And you got to give the Rebbe a lot of credit. And he remained 100% within the realm of the Rashi Yeshiva. So, yes, Benjamin. So
why did the Rebbe not reveal the letter for 20 years then?
No, the letter was revealed. This Reform rabbi got it 20 years later. It was
But he did write it initially.
Yeah, the letter.
So why didn't he sign?
Why didn't
the Lubavitcher Rebbe sign on the original letter?
No one asked him. The letter was all Litvisha. That's what I told you. It was all the Litvisha Welt. And you think Rabbaran Cutler would have asked the Rebbe to sign? Don't you know where Rabbaran is coming from? From Slutz, Kletz, Rav Shach, who was his mentor there? No? Do I have to tell you about the please, I told you to take off 7 years and just listen to Rakefet and whyutorah.org. And then we'll talk. Yes, Rabbi Hashem. Oh, God, so much I can tell you, but I got to get out or Rabbi Bednesh is going to put me in Chayrim and Yoma's going to put me in Chayrim. My dear students, when we pick up next week, we're going to come back to Forbidden by Jewish Law. I'm going to show you an interesting source. And then we come to the Rav. And you'll understand, Meisha, the Rav, the hardest viewpoint to take. Because to say yes or to say no is easy. To be a Talmud of the Rav and follow him on this point, you struggle with it until today. I have a bit of a solution, but stupidity tells me, yeah, you have a solution, but take a look how the machloket rages on. So you think you discovered America? There may be no black and white solution. It's a question of degree, feeling, emotion, circumstances. But we'll deal with the Rav in detail. So my dear students, I want to reiterate, what did we do today? All right, Baruch Hashem, we did today. Who didn't sign? Why they didn't sign? And then who did sign? And the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Sunday morning, Be'ezrat Hashem, I'm picking up where we left off, and you'll see it's the heart of Yiddishkeit. What a question. Menashe Klein, intravenous. Reb Menashe's opinion, the Rav's opinion, Reb Baron Soloveitchik's opinion, and poor David Applebaum and Aaron Rakefet. But we'll see, we have strong support on our side. And then we pick up a very fascinating topic, which is not earth-shaking, but all about Lulav and Etreg, where you make the bracha, the influence of Kabbalah on halacha, on practice, etc. All right, I have a lot of freebies here, but I want to spare time. I want to sign off on your end, and Morty, you'll open it in a second. Until we meet again in health and happiness, I thank you from the bottom of my heart of honoring me with your presence today. Das Vedanya.
Morty, the recording has stopped.
Okay. Are there any questions?
You can unmute yourselves if you like.
All right, if there are no questions, well, I convinced everyone I'm right. Then some of the free, I apologize to those listening.
You can unmute yourselves if you like.
No one has unmuted. I'm not getting any question. Do you hear me?
Some have, but...
Anyone have
people can unmute.
Okay.
People can unmute if they want.
Okay, the freebies. These are a number of copies of... the Rav talking about the international dateline is what I quoted in class yesterday. And these are printouts. They're two sheets. If you're interested, it's fabulous. It's word by word what the Rav is saying. This is Rabbi Billet of Woodmere recalls the Rav and his interaction with the Rav. It's a memoir. Very, very fascinating. This breaks the heart. My dear students, in Biden and Harris, we have the ultimate description of the end of the Jewish people in the Western world. Assimilation, intermarriage, ignorance, the silent Holocaust. Harris, you know, is married to a Jewish man. His children from his first wife call her not Kamala, but Mamala. All right, they know a Yiddish word, mamala. From knowing one Yiddish word and being a good Jew, it's a very long distance and guaranteeing continuity. But ultimately, Biden's family, it's unbelievable. Biden's first crush, the so-called Roman Catholic, who say they're practicing, whatever that means. I mean, I'm not very impressed with the Catholic religion. You do whatever the heck you want, and then you tell the priest, and he gives you a few Hail Marys. Very different than our concept of tshuva and al-chait. And Biden's first crush was on a Jewish girl in his high school, and she told him to get lost, you're a Catholic, I can't have anything to do with you socially. I got to give credit to that girl, whoever she is. I hope today she's living in Israel with her hair covered. All his children married Jews, without exception. One was married to two Jewish people, Jews. All his grandchildren, even if they're not halachically Jewish, they're patrilineal, their father is Jewish, all his grandchildren are consider themselves Jews. Unbelievable. Biden boasts. The guy is, I tell you, fabulous. He says, I've achieved the ultimate Jewish nachas. They look at him. He says, my son-in-law, the world-class surgeon, what every Jewish mother wants her kid to be. I don't know, today, when I was growing up, you put on your carriage, my son, the future doctor. Today you might put on the carriage, my son, the future high-tech genius. My son, the future partner of Elon Musk, who also has Jewish blood in him. Here's a beautiful memoir. Rabbi Sacks brought me to Lubavitch. This guy was one of Rabbi Sacks's bodyguards, and today he's a full-fledged Lubavitcher, beard and all. New Shluchim in Atwater, California. Unbelievable. Rabbi Yaakov and Rachel Kalbach have recently established Chabad of Atwater Village. I think, if this is the Rabbi Kalbach, I met at Chabad, so he's also one of my virtual students. And now they're in Yenimsveld, Atwater, Kol HaKavod. The Lubavitcher Rebbe on the defeat of an incumbent president. It's the Lubavitcher Rebbe speaking. Beautiful. The man was an American, understood democracy. Kol HaKavod. Catholic Church, the endless sex problems. Thank God we Jews are out of the news recently. We should continue to be out of the news. Yom, are you taking? Skulos Vahan, this, 1 second, I'll tell you what this is about. This is about from the Baal Tanya and his children, wherever they can find a Chabad source, what to do when there is a plague like Corona. Fascinating. This, I believe, was sent to me by Yomo, who found this source in a Hebrew book. And the Eitik said the Meshichata, there's going to be a plague, and how we have to solve it, and the Yudke Vavke, unbelievable. This is an article from Tablet on the Kushner family, about Rabbi Teitz, Elizabeth, all these survivors who became multi-millionaires, billionaires, and they built Elizabeth, and all that Rabbi Teitz built was through them. This, you didn't send it, so then it was sent to me from Chabad, I would imagine. This is an unbelievable picture that proves there was mixed seating in Europe. This is a simcha in the home of the Mira Rosh Yeshiva, and it's an engagement party, and the men and women are sitting together. This is an unbelievable picture that brings tears to my eyes. It's three Jews walking in Brisk. They were learning by the Brisker Rav. This is Reb Naftali Wasserman, Reb Elchanan's son, killed by Hitler. This is the Simcha Sheps, who later becomes a Rosh Yeshiva in Teira Vadas. He translates the first Rashi translation into English. Is his, the one with the blue cover, the five volumes. This is my Rebbe, who changed my whole life, Reb Kenneth Fishman, my eighth grade Rebbe in Salanta. This is the Rav with Reb Shneur Cutler. This is Reb Simcha Zelik and his family, the Brisker Dayan and his family. I wish you could see these pictures up close. What a problem we have here. This is unbelievable. This is Reb Yeruchim Gerelik in his youth in Rotten. This is Reb Yeruchim. Benjamin, when I was in the yeshiva, there were two rabbeim that made noise that you spoke about, the Rav and Reb Yeruchim Gerelik. Wow, he's walking here. That's Reb Meir Halevi Soloveitchik. That's the Brisker Rav's son right here. And wow, that's Talmidim of the Brisker Rav. This is Reb Aaron Lichtenstein's yearbook from Yeshiva Chaim Berlin. Look what he looked like, the little Reb Aaron with the baby face, the babe. And Aaron is the Masiftis answer to the quiz kids. Baby's going to confine himself to the Beit Medrash. our preambulatory encyclopedias erudition in all fields of human endeavor keep his teachers on their apprehensive toes. This is what they wrote about Rebbein. This is fascinating Jewish trivia. I read it. I'm proud to say I knew a few answers, particularly the one about who knew seven languages, played baseball, etc., etc. And that was the catcher was a spy, Mo Berg. The late 30s, in the 50s, played for Casey Stengel. And Casey Stengel used to say, Mo Berg, my catcher, can speak seven languages, but he can't hit in any of them. This is the Mashkiach of the Yeshiva, my Chavruta, Rabbi Yosef Blau. This is the total different opinion of Ani Rothkopf. We totally differ, but you got to hear his point of view. The ethical cost of Jewish communal support for Donald Trump. And finally, this is a beautiful piece on a Sheikhet, Rabbi Yosef Goldstein. Reb Blazer Silva met him in a DP camp. He was looking for a Sheikhet for Cincinnati. Brought him to Cincinnati, had him remarry and start. He lost his whole first family, start a new family. And then they offered him a big shtela. Why do you have to be a Sheikhet and a Lamed in the Talmud Torah? And he goes down south to this position with a tremendous salary. And he's walking on the street. And a black person is walking opposite. And as the black person approaches them, he goes into the gutter. And he's and the rabbi asked the people accompanying, what's happening? He said, no, this is the South. The black have to show their respect for the white. They can't walk on the same street together. He sees white people. He has to go into the gutter. He refused to take the position and live with such conditions, hatred for the black. He went back to Cincinnati and remained a Sheikhet there the rest of his life. And I've met members of his family in my travels, from Jews 100%. My dear students, we have to clear out of here. Rabbi Bednarsh will chop my head off until we meet again in health and happiness. Das Vidanya. Love you, everybody. Thank you so much. Jack, I'll mention about the Mishnah Halacha online on the Sunday class.